Anya floated in a strange, lazy dream world of sounds and images. She saw faces from her past and faces she didn't recognize. She heard sounds and felt things that seemed out of place. All of them seemed to swirl together like melted ice cream in the hot summer sun. She tossed, she turned, and still she couldn't get comfortable. She thought about the ninjutsu class she'd seen this evening, and how it seemed that someone trained well in the art might be a truly formidable opponent if faced in combat. Anya wasn't sure she wanted to test that theory anytime soon. She thought about Ken. What in the world had made her kiss him on the cheek like that? It was just a peck, after all. But still, Anya wondered what she felt for him. Certainly he was attractive enough, but she sensed there was something else about him that drew her in. The mystery of his family, the missing piece of history, and the quest to restore his lineage. She found it all so noble. And she admired him for it. Tomorrow, they would start their journey to find the Vajra. She turned over again, aware that her arm was going numb from sleeping on it too much. She propped herself up again. Her stomach hurt, too. The last time that happened... Her body tensed. Was someone in her room again? She cracked her eyes just a sliver, trying to pierce the darkness and discern anything that might indicate the presence of someone. She felt a shift in the air. It tickled her face. Someone was there. She watched the room some more. Now she could pick out a black shape moving against the black backdrop of her room. There seemed to be no ambient light coming in from outside that she might be able to use to help her see who had invaded her room, potentially for the second time in as many days. The shape moved to her desk. He's looking for something. Adrenaline poured into her system. She could feel her smaller muscles contracting involuntarily as she steeled herself for the possibility of combat. She wondered if they would simply search her stuff and then leave. They. She didn't know where that thought had come from. As far as she could tell, there was only one person in the room, and yet... No, there was one more. Somewhere Anya couldn't see, and trying to shift in the bed might make her a target again. She needed to find out who was in her room. She flexed her hands, bunching up bits of the covers and readying her grip. She would whip the covers one way and launch herself out of the bed the other way. She threw the covers at the shadow and swung her legs off the opposite side. She flipped off the bed and then straightened up with her hands held high, ready to fight. As she fell, a knee appeared on her shoulder, driving her face first into the carpet.
That wasn't a very smart thing to do, Miss Kate.
What do you want?
Where is it?
Where's what?
The Dorje.
What the hell is a Dorje?
The item he has hired you to find.
Who? What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Okawa approached you last night at the Budokan. We saw your meeting. You've been with them ever since. And we believe you already have the Dorje in your possession. We want it.
I don't know what a Dorje is.
He calls it a Vajra.
We haven't even started looking for it yet. How can I possibly have it?
We were told you had it in your possession already.
Well, I don't.
Why should we believe you?
Don't believe me. I don't care. Go ahead and tear my room apart. You won't find the damn thing. I don't know where you got your information from, but it's obviously a load of crap.
If we find out you lied to us, we'll be back to kill you.
The pressure on her shoulder and arm disappeared.
Can I get up now? Hello?
Carefully, Anya got up off the floor. The room felt empty now. She walked slowly over to the lights and turned them on. Her window was open. Anya ran to it and looked out. She looked up, down, and all over, but saw no one clinging to the outside of the hotel. There'd be no way for someone to get out from this height. It didn't make sense. Unless, of course, they had parachutes or some other high-tech gear they could use to escape. And yet they'd been here. At least two of them. And they'd very neatly vanished into thin air. Anya sat down on the side of her bed. Part of her wanted to call Ken. She wanted to let him know that other people were after his precious item. Garin had warned her of the same thing, but Garin could be behind this whole thing. She could call Ken, see what he thought about the whole thing. Ken might have known these guys were coming, or maybe he had sent them. Anya frowned. She couldn't see that happening. Ken seemed far too focused on retrieving the Vajra. Being in cahoots with some third party after the artifact seemed unlikely and completely out of character for him. But Garin had also warned Anya that she didn't really know Ken that well.
This is ridiculous. I just need some sleep.
She turned out the lights and crawled back into the bed. She needed sleep. A good sleep that would help her get up tomorrow and start the hunt with a rested mind. There'd be plenty of time to discuss the wacky occurrences of the night with Ken en route to wherever he was taking her.
Well, it appears you weren't lying.
Anya tried to sit up, but a firm hand held her down. She could make out a set of eyes staring at her, surrounded by black cloth and face paint.
Don't. You'll only succeed in making me angry if you do that.
I told you I didn't have it.
If you had been lying, the first thing you would have gone for was the Dorje. You didn't do that, so I believe you don't have it. That's good.
So, you'll leave now?
Not quite. We want to propose a simple business arrangement.
Forget it. I don't make business deals with people I don't know.
Ask yourself if you really want to know who we are, Anya. Are you prepared to know that kind of thing?
What's the deal?
We know he's taking you west tomorrow. If you find the Dorje, we want it. It's that simple.
What do I get out of it?
Your life.
That's not much of a deal.
I could kill you now if you prefer.
Fine. You've got a deal.
We know where you are, wherever you are. And if you betray us, there will be no escape from our vengeance. Remember that.
All right.
It's time for you to sleep now.
But what?
Nezuma Hidetaki watched from the back of the black BMW M3 through heavily tinted windows as Anya Creed and Kenichi Ogawa walked into the train station near Ueno Park. He'd been tailing them since they'd left the hotel earlier that morning, using a network of low-grade idiots to do the grunt work while he stayed in his car and monitored their efforts. But Ogawa was proving himself quite adept at nonchalant counter-surveillance skills, purposefully backtracking several times, nearly catching one of Nezuma's men as he tailed too close by a video store in Kanda. A last-minute break spared the entire team from being burned, but one careless mistake had almost ruined the entire surveillance effort. That man now lay in the footwell next to Nezuma. He was sweating.
You should have anticipated that he would backtrack. You were told to expect such tactics. This man is not a fool. I wish I could say the same about you.
Master, forgive me. It will not happen again. Please, I beg you.
Nezuma shook his head. The problem with the youth of today was their rampant sense of self-entitlement. Not one understood the need to work and work hard for what they got in life. Youngsters these days deemed themselves worthy without having to prove their worth. As a result, they were sloppy and inefficient. All of his employees were like this, except one. In the front seat behind the steering wheel sat the only person Nezuma trusted with his life, Shuko. Her ebony hair hung in a tasteful bob, unmarred by the trendy tea-brown staining so common to others of her generation. At 25, Shuko was Nezuma's finest pupil and most loyal servant. As skilled with her hands and feet as she was with firearms and explosives, and possessing an almost superhuman ability to overcome risk and danger, Shuko was worth more to Nezuma than anyone else.
We should go soon if we hope to stay with them.
Oh, yes. I would very much hate to miss my train.
Master! Please!
Pitiful. Failure is not to be tolerated.
Shuko slid effortlessly from the car. Bags in hand, they walked across the street.
Thank God I have you.
I am yours, Master.
Nezuma smiled as the bright sunshine streamed down through the morning haze. They reached the other side of the street and entered the train station. Shuko sidled through the crowd and acquired two tickets for the bullet train heading west toward Osaka. She handed one to Nezuma.
We should get aboard. The train will be leaving in a few minutes.
What about the car? We can't simply leave it there like that.
Shuko's eyes danced as she withdrew a slim white iPod from her pocket. She scrolled through the menu for a moment and then handed it to Nezuma. Nezuma looked down. She had selected a song called Demolition.
Well, press play.
Very impressive. Is it a new formula you've recently cooked up?
Something I've been working on for some time now. I'm glad I had a chance to field test it before our trip.
As am I. You're marvelous, and I don't deserve you.
Let us not miss our train.
Yes, yes, it would be rude, I'd imagine, to keep our friends waiting.
What if the American woman spots you?
I doubt very much she will. Besides, she is likely still sore from the other night. Probably more so than she would be willing to admit. But the pain will serve to keep her awareness dulled a bit.
And Ogawa?
I don't think Ogawa knows the extent of our involvement, if he even suspects it at all. He seems far too interested in recovering the Dorje than he does in discovering who is truly after the artifact besides him. His devotion to his family will be his final undoing.
They boarded the train and headed toward the rear compartment, passing a snack car and scores of other passengers.
I was able to find out their seats are to the front. They are due to get off in Osaka.
Excellent. We'll keep tabs on them anyway, just in case Ogawa has any surprises in store for us.
I don't think even Ogawa is foolish enough to risk jumping from a train traveling in excess of 100 miles per hour.
Nor do I, but he is a ninja. I will put nothing past him, and I would urge you to do the same.
As you say, Master.
They settled themselves into their seats, and Shuko immediately began reading the various books she'd brought with her. Nezuma insisted she maintain a steady diet of literature and current affairs. When he'd met her, she'd been a homeless girl of 16, living under the bridges by Tokyo Bay. While others like her had readily sold their bodies for money, Shuko had maintained her dignity by refusing to do so. Instead, she scrounged for old computer parts and had taught herself how to make them work again. She was eking out the barest of existences when Nezuma came down looking for other young guns he could recruit. His monthly forays always granted him unlimited access to the desperate and depraved. Nezuma set up pit matches between the liveliest fighters and watched as the skinny, ravenous youths tore each other apart for the promise of money, food, and a job. But on this foray, Nezuma found himself surprised in more ways than one. Just prior to the match, he'd seen a scuffle in the cardboard community that bordered the fight ring. Nezuma walked into the alley, past the unconscious young man splayed out across a garbage can, and saw Shuko bending back to work on her computers on a decrepit particle board desk.
What's your name?
Nezuma had expected a deeper male voice to answer him, but he heard only a soft one, honed to an edge by the poor economic conditions that had forged a raw spirit.
I am Shuko.
The Claw? That's quite unique. Do you like cats or something?
Shuko had turned to look at him. He could see the beauty in her eyes, hidden under the smudges of dust and soot. But there was something else in her eyes that moved Nezuma. Honor.
Cats have nothing to do with my name.
I see. What did he want?
What they all want. My body.
And do you know who I am?
You are the man who sets up fights and recruits the winners to work for him. I am told most of those you hire end up dead within a few months.
That is true. I have so far found no one who can handle the work I set before them.
That is because the people you hire are morons.
Are you always so blunt in your opinion of others?
Only if it is deserved. I am not opposed to giving respect to those who merit it.
Down here, I'm sure you don't find that very often, do you?
I don't find it at all.
Where did you learn to fight?
Here.
It doesn't bother you, hurting someone with your skills.
Why should it bother me? My opponents never think much of me because I am a girl. That is their downfall.
Will you fight for me tonight in the ring?
On one condition.
Name it.
If I win, you take me away from this place and teach me everything you know. I don't want to ever come back here.
Nezuma knew then that she would beat anyone he matched against her.
You have my solemn promise, Shuko-san.
Nezuma could see the holes in her pants, the threadbare shirt she wore, and the shoes with no soles. Shuko had turned to him at that point and bowed.
Master.
Nezuma had bowed back, aware that he felt something that night for the first time, a certain respect. For Nezuma, it was the first time he'd ever felt this way toward a woman. Shuko beat 5 men that night. She had a raw talent for street fighting Nezuma had not seen in many years. She broke bones, ripped skin, and gouged eyes. She sent 2 of the men stumbling out of the ring, clutching at their testicles. Over time, the bond between Shuko and Nezuma became unbreakable as he schooled her in martial arts and every aspect of killing he could think of. When he had no more to teach, they went abroad, studying with arcane experts and borderline psychopaths as they absorbed every skill that would add to their ability to bring Nezuma's plan to fruition. Then they returned to Japan, ready to unleash it. He watched her reading and smiled. Shuko meant the world to him. But so too did the Dorje Anya Creed and Kenichi Ogawa were trying to find.